As loud as it'll go, I couldn't hear myself talk because my earphones were down. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller. We'll be with you live on this 18th day of January, 2000. I almost said five. Got to catch myself, 2006. Folks, how's this for time warp? We're almost through the month of January in 2006. I am just utterly amazed. Did somebody already tape this and our entire lives are on a VCR tape and somebody just hit fast forward? You can see the images, the sound you can hear, but you can see the images and they're just whipping by. Something is happening. Did the Earth speed up or something? I mean, time is just whipping by. And generally speaking, time flies when you're having fun. I didn't know we were having that much fun. The time should be just, I don't know, sped up here. At any rate, I've got Webster Tarpley on today. Webster Griffin Tarpley, to be exact, and he's an activist, investigative journalist, and a historian best known for his George Bush, the name of the book is The Unauthorized Biography, I'm sure George didn't authorize it, which has become an underground classic. He co-authored American Leviathan, The Administrative Fascism Under the Bush Regime, which identified, and we're talking Daddy Bush here, identified many tendencies which have become prominent today. He's an expert on international terrorism with decades of experience. He directed the study at Chiha, and I'll have to get more on this one. I guess, who killed Aldo Moro? We'll get him to explain that one. But at any rate, he'll be my guest right after the first break here. I just wanted to say something to the listening audience out there. I had a call from a guy that left a message on my phone and didn't leave anything else, just his name and a phone number, and I thought, this must be important. Maybe he thinks I know him or whatever. Call the guy back, and he wants to know about some subject matter that somebody talked about on the network. And when I said to him, I said, you expect me to remember that? And he says, well, you've got a memory, don't you? Now, Mike, I know that you're listening to the program today. Come on, man. Give us a break here. I mean, call another network, call the CEO of another network and ask them if he knows about a tiny bit of subject matter that was brought up by some talk show host and who knows on what day. And this is really the point why I bring this up, because a lot of us do the same things. We get a little bit lazy. We don't write down the information that we want to do a follow-up on, and then we have to depend on somebody else to go dig up the information. First, we've got to find out what you're talking about, what you're thinking, and then try to go from there. I don't like to be rude to people, but do us a favor. Don't waste our time. Do a little bit of work on your end. Give as much information as you humanly and possibly can, and we may be able to help you. With that said, we'll take the break here. Back on the other side with Webster Tarpley right after this.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
This is Christine with another Bring 'Em Home message. Have we as Americans had enough yet? With the recent crisis in New Orleans and the southern Gulf Coast, death and destruction have been visited upon Americans once again. The government's response has been to bring foreign troops onto America's land. Federal and foreign troops now control the region, while the National Guardsmen are away, entangled in foreign wars, unable to protect their homes and families. The New World Order has reached its long-planned objective, to secure American troops on foreign soil and foreign troops on American soil. Let's get these foreign troops out and bring our American troops home now. Help us make the public aware of this dire situation by displaying on your cars our Bring 'Em Home magnetic ribbons or our new Bring 'Em Home bumper stickers. To place your orders, call 877-605-9200 or go to rbnlive.com or bringemhome.org.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
According to Patrick J. Buchanan, well, you don't see him on the CNN anymore. He's not brought up that much on television anymore. He just came out the other day. As a matter of fact, today, I'm reading the article right in front of me. I should have looked at the date. He came out on the issue here of Iran. They're rattling the sabers right now. And he made a point here. Of course, he's about half off on his numbers, but he said, with an estimated 200 nuclear weapons, Israel is fully capable of deterring Iran and a massive retaliation if she is attacked by Iran. Iran is not attacking anybody. And even the Ayatollah Khomeini that came into power after the guy left that we installed, the CIA did, I think, back in what, 1952, 1953, the Shah of Iran? This guy is no fool. Now, I've said this before, I am not opposed to any Islamic nation in the Middle East having a couple of nuclear weapons for deterrence. We're over there right now digging around the sand dunes looking for weapons of mass destruction. That was our excuse for Iraq, folks. That is now the excuse, the neocon excuse for going into Iran. And I don't know what Bush is thinking or if he's comatose or what's going on with the Bushites here. Or the Bush lights, however you prefer. But does this man really think that this is going to wash after everybody on planet Earth here has figured out he lied about Iran? Oh, it was just faulty information. If you believe that, I've got some faulty ground down a Florida swamp I'd like to sell you. With us this afternoon is Webster Tarpley. Good afternoon, Mr. Tarpley. How are you doing?
Thank you, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Fine. Glad to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I am just amazed here, and I guess we'll start out with the latest here, with the saber-rattling going on over Iran. Somebody is trying to, it appears to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Webster, it looks to me like somebody is interested in pitting a million Muslims against a million Christians worldwide and having a jihadist holy war here.
And I think you're correct, and I think that's essentially the Bush administration, the neocons, Tony Blair, and certain part of Israeli public life. I'm glad to hear that Patrick Buchanan has decided to address this issue. I put out my first warnings in this regard in the summer of 2004. Since then, I've learned that there was a meeting in a U.S. Base in the Middle East back in 2004, right before the presidential election, which had the goal of planning operations against Iran, and it was attended by some NATO countries, but not attended by others, and the plan was very much alive and came close to being realized, and I think it sort of receded when it was clear that the Bush regime could get itself reelected, so to speak, through vote fraud in a couple of key states, and that it wasn't necessary at that point to go to the full Iranian attack. Just in the past 2 months, though, I would point to two sets of facts, and there are lots and lots of things to say about this. The first one is that the United States has been trying to line up neighboring countries, primarily Turkey, primarily Pakistan, but also the former Soviet Central Asian republics, to be part of an attack on Iran. And the key moment, I think, was back in early December. It looked like Turkey had given a pledge to President Putin of Russia that they would not join in such a war. And that was when you saw this funny situation of Robert Mueller of the FBI and Porter Goss of the CIA and then Condoleezza Rice of the State Department all scurrying into Turkey to try to strong-arm and arm-twist the Turkish government to get them to go along with this attack. And it seems, as far as I can tell, and it's hard to tell, that Turkey is sticking to that pledge to Putin and also mainly sticking to their own interests, which have nothing to do with an attack on Iran.
Well, the information that I've gotten, Webster, and see if you can verify this, is that China and Russia has made an agreement of sorts. I don't know exactly in political terms exactly how you would phrase it, but kind of a mutual defense pact or whatever the case may be in case things get a little ugly in the Middle East. And we now have China and Russia teaming up together.
Well, that is what you've just seen in the past 24 hours. That's the other side. And I have to say, that's the defensive alliance. That is a defensive move primarily, vis-a-vis this rabid fury of the neocon fascist madmen who are seeking a much, much wider war in the Middle East. There's something called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, of which both Russia and China are members, along with those former Soviet Central Asian republics, the five of them, plus a bunch of other states. And they have been instrumental in asking the United States to leave a base in Uzbekistan, which would have been used for the bombing of Iran, but which now can't be because the U.S. is out of it. There's another U.S. base in Kyrgyzstan, the status of which for me right now is a little bit uncertain. But surely there are such preparations. And then you look on the Pakistani side, there were statements coming out of the Pakistani foreign ministry that they would not join in any attack on Iran. And well, they might not, because they're also an Islamic state with a nuclear weapon. And whatever happens to Iran today is likely to happen to Pakistan tomorrow. So you've got this pattern of threats against Iran. Now, I have to say that the whole thing is clouded by the fact that the president of Iran, the new one, seems to be a prize fool who shoots his mouth off and makes statements that are fueling and aiding the aggressive propaganda machines of Washington and London and
especially Israel. I've seen a few of his comments, and standing alone, and this is what the media has picked up here in this country, on the surface. I'll give you a classic example. Pat Robertson has been shooting himself in the foot, it seems, at any given turn. The man doesn't know when to keep his mouth shut, or at least consider what he's going to say and the effect of it. We had his position on China and abortion. Well, he's got no problem with birth control in China, but I guess it's not okay here. Hugo Chavez, you know, we ought to murder this guy. We ought to take him out. Well, he made a statement last week about Ariel Sharon, and I know where this came from because I know enough about Pat Robertson that he really doesn't like what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. Nobody on this planet seems to like it except Israel. And those remarks, that remark was kind of centered out of his belief system, but that didn't stop the media from taking that one soundbite, plastering it all over the media. Oh, see, here's Pat Robertson. He's a fool. Well, any time that you can take a representative, I guess you could say, of a Christian country, especially a televangelist, everybody knows who Pat Robertson is. He tried to run for president. I mean, everybody knows who this guy is. So he's fair game in the public arena. But I know where that statement came from. Now, you know, I'm looking at the situation here, and Webster, correct me if I'm wrong against this one. Kim Jong-il, the president of North Korea, said to have a couple of nuclear weapons, said to be working on the nuclear weapons. This is what the North Koreans, man, woman, and child, believe, that the United States is going to invade them, the United States is going to occupy them. All they have to do is look in recent history past of what happened in Germany. Okay, Hitler was not such a nice guy. We had a world war. We were over there for reconstruction of their country, but we never left. So they use that and they cite that as an example. Whatever happened to the State Department? Whatever happened to detente? And if I can be as imaginative or as bold to say, if I were president of the United States, I would have a meeting with Kim Jong-il to tell him that, look, we don't give a hoot how you run your country, how you run your people into the ground, what you think on human rights. We don't care about any of that. Know this, that unless you attack the United States, are a major part in attacking the United States, in an overt, aggressive war move, you people don't have anything to worry about from the United States. Wouldn't that be a very simple thing to accomplish?
I think something of that nature is what would be needed. The question with Iran is you have this man, Ahmadinejad, who makes extremely unwise statements. Now, he's made threats against Israel and so forth, and he's called certain historical facts into question. We don't need to go into them.
Right.
But the thing about it is Iran has been on the receiving end of blood-curdling threats of nuclear war from the United States, from the British, and from Israel for the past 18 months. Now, nobody seemed to be very upset about that. I've been on radio in Israel now a couple of times in the last several months, on Israeli national radio, which, despite the name, is a private radio network broadcast in English in Israel and the rest of the Middle East. And I had a debate with a very nice rabbi who said, well, we feel threatened by the fact that the Israelis, that the Iranians may get their hands on several nuclear weapons. And I had to point out, doubtless, the Iranian side feels very threatened by your 400 to 500 nuclear weapons, your nuclear submarines, your IRBMs, your anti-ballistic missile systems, and everything else that you have. The question is, we need a comprehensive peace settlement, a peace conference for the Middle East to settle everything. If you want Iranian nukes on the table, fine, then Israeli nukes go on the table.
Well, and Webster, now that plays into the United Nations agenda, the third stage of disarmament worldwide, and I'm surprised the United States has not done this yet, but I look forward to do it in the future. That part of this program, Phase 3, is a disarmament program where we have to demonstrate moral compass and moral courage by disarming first. Now, think about that, ladies and gentlemen. I've said this on this program before. You want to know why we have not had a world war, 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever the case may be? It's because of nuclear weapons. We finally figured out a way to kill en masse by simply pushing a button. But nobody so far has wanted to venture into that arena. We'll be right back with my guest, Webster Tarpley. Stay tuned.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Or click on our banner at RBNLive.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Do you desire your health and vitality to be in harmony with the rhythms of nature? Trivortex technology features subtle energy products that boost energy levels, relieve pain and stress, and much more at very affordable prices. You have the opportunity to wear vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that absorb through your skin rather than taking them orally. This is real, not science fiction. Go to trivortex.com, that is TRIVORTEX.com, to open a whole new realm of health and vitality for you and your family. This is Brian David Anderson, inventor of Trivortex technology products that assist in so many areas, such as pain relief, symptoms of menopause, losing weight, or stopping smoking. Trivortex technology is in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
It's just the hits just keep on coming. Latest from DV Kid, is there an Enron smoking cannon of 9/11? Just a few days before 9/11, the person that they have on the hot seat now, the guy that is threatening a lot of people coming forth here, Jeff Skilling, there was a big stock sale September 6th of 2001, kind of like we saw the puts in the airline. It was the best-kept secret in the United States. I mean, even Willie Brown, the mayor then of San Francisco, even knew not to fly on September 11th. So I guess there was a monumental breakdown in intelligence somewhere along the line, but one would not expect that from our government, would we? Webster, gosh, I mean, how strange does this have to get? I mean, George Bush has been stumping for the last 2 months. He's finally come out. And he is doing his dog and pony show in defense. I mean, he even went as far last week in front of a veterans group saying and rebutting what has been said that we're over in Iraq for oil and many other things. And that's just not true. We're over there to give these fine people democracy. Well, I'm fascinated by the fact that no Iranian history has been given or Iraqi history has been given to through the talking news fluffs on the major medias, no historical background about these Iraqis. I mean, these are the first people that had public lights on streets on the entire planet. Mathematics. I mean, there have been many good things that have come out of Iraq, but the American people are wanting for something other than, well, these are just a bunch of irate jihadist militant ragheads over there, and we've got to go in there and start basically, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Webster, what they've just done is created a civil war over there that I don't know if we're going to stick around to see the end of that one, but we've created a mass contention and mass confusion in that country that's going to go on for years.
Yes. The you also have to think that this is the purpose of the entire thing. The purpose, of course, had nothing to do with this hogwash about democracy or freedom or spreading any of that. The basic plan that they're working from is called the Bernard Lewis Plan. Bernard Lewis is the leading Arabist, I guess, in the Anglo-American world. He operates from the Princeton Institute for Advanced Study. And back in the 1970s, Bernard Lewis came up with a plan for dismembering, balkanizing, carving up all the existing states of the Arab world based on the underlying ethnic groups that had been ignored or perhaps even built in by the British and the French with their Sykes-Picot agreement during the First World War. So if you look at the Bernard Lewis plan for Iraq, it naturally has Kurdistan is the north, so that's going to become part of a greater Kurdistan. The center part is going to be this landlocked, bankrupt Sunni entity, and then you have a Shiistan in the south. If we go on to look at Iran, we come up with things that are even more ambitious, because Iran is going to get carved into five or six pieces. There's going to be, above all, a part of it called Arabistan or Ahvaz or it's the oil-producing area. It's the area that has the Karg Island oil terminal. It's the northern coast of the Persian Gulf, if you can think of that on your map. That's going to be detached. You were mentioning, I think we talked about Balochistan a minute ago. Balochistan is going to be part of a Balochistan that will also be carved out of Pakistan. Parts of people are going to go with the Tajiks, with the Azeris in the north. There might be some Armenians coming out of this somehow. And sitting then in the middle of it all is a landlocked, bankrupt entity called Iranistan. And those will be the ethnic Persians sitting in the middle of the ruins of this country. This was the subject of a meeting that Michael Ledeen had here at the American Enterprise Institute about 2 months ago, where he said, you know, people don't realize, but there are ethnic fault lines in Iran, and we expect to explode them, and that is the key to their war plan. Their war plan basically says that in Iraq, the attack went fine, the occupation went badly. So forget about the occupation. Just have the attack in the form of what used to be called a punitive expedition. Go in and destroy things using these mini nukes, using nuclear weapons in general, bombing, land special forces, paratroopers, have them blow up underground scientific complexes and things of this sort, uranium enrichment, nuclear reactors, whatever you find, and then foment this shattering of Iran according to ethnic lines and get out as fast as you can. The whole thing is over in 2 or 3 weeks. So I think that's absolute utopian madness. That is the very midsummer of neocon insanity. It is a hysterical flight forward. We have to remember that a lot of the neocons who are doing the planning are on the verge of indictment. We've had the indictment of Libby, a very important neocon, probably even more important, Lord Conrad Black of the Hollinger Corporation, who's the guy who pays for the American Enterprise Institute. He stole $80 million, and the big question is how much of that went to the American Enterprise Institute to pay for people like Pearl and Ledeen and Wormser and the rest of them. So the Bernard Lewis plan, I have put this on the Internet. It's in various places. If you want to look for Bernard Lewis plan for the Middle East, you'll probably find this updated map that I posted a couple of months ago.
All right, real good. We'll take the break. We've got a long segment coming up. We'll take your calls into the next hour. And for our downline affiliates down there, we recognize we're having a few satellite burps here and there, but don't panic. it comes right back on. We have not had our T1 line dropped in here yet, so everybody just hang on and stay sane. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Christine with another Brigham Home message. Have we as Americans had enough yet? With the recent crisis in New Orleans and the southern Gulf Coast, death and destruction have been visited upon Americans once again. The government's response has been to bring foreign troops onto America's land. Federal and foreign troops now control the region, while the National Guardsmen are away, entangled in foreign wars, unable to protect their homes and families. The New World Order has reached its long-planned objective, to secure American troops on foreign soil and foreign troops on American soil. Let's get these foreign troops out and bring our American troops home now. Help us make the public aware of this dire situation by displaying on your cars our Bring 'em Home magnetic ribbons or our new Bring 'em Home bumper stickers. To place your orders, call 877-605-9200 or go to rbnlive.com or bringemhome.org.
Why continue to suffer from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people report improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses this same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no side effects. Join others in discovering a return to a natural health and wellness. Don't just treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto-sequences for various health conditions and is very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call Republic Broadcasting Network toll-free at 1-800-724-2719.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academy, 280 Tenny Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
On the front page of RBN Live, we've got the story about Michael Ledeen on the Niger documents. The American who advised the Pentagon says he wrote for the magazine that found forged Niger documents. Remember the yellow cake documents, folks? Well, you can trace it back to this guy. Webster, I want to get a handle, because I've made this statement on the air before. We have September 11, 2001. We see the government at breakneck speed, shredding the Constitution. We were told that the reason why we were attacked by these Al-Qaeda types was that they hate our freedom. So what does the government, our government, do? Promptly turns around and shreds the documents that guarantee our freedom. Actually, it comes from God. Governments don't grant freedoms any more than they can take them away. But, needless to say, we have had President Bush coming out and saying that this is going to be a 100-year war on terrorism. Spain was the first on the radar scope to throw in their 2 cents along with George Bush. The other countries, Germany and, of course, Tony Blair in England. I mean, gosh, that's another subject entirely. Old arch enemy that we've never really gotten away from. They're still in our midst. But I see this supposed war on terrorism. Now, I made the statement, we're not going to have another world war. not in the sense that we saw World War One or World War One Part Two. We're not going to have many nations arming themselves in a conventional war, going at each other's throats. It's not going to happen. We were the first aggressors with nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Some people are still doubting that decision to this day. That's still a hot topic of debate. But we've entered into an arena that on a last-gasp attempt to push somebody into a corner, if they're involved in a conventional war and they're getting their butts kicked, they may in fact, resort to a nuclear option. But I don't really see that happening. I see nuclear weapons in the hands of the people that have them now, the countries that have them now, as being a real deterrent against any escalating wars. We're seeing these limited wars. But my point, Webster, is I'm looking at this, the new boogeyman on the block. It's the war on terrorism, this shadowy thing that the countries can't divulge any information about because they don't want to give any tips. I see this as one thing and one thing only, to worldwide put down any move against the globalists that are trying to give us our global union here. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I've written a book about September 11th. It's called 9-1-1 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, and I'm very happy to say that I just presented the second edition to public opinion in New York City on Sunday night in a pretty well-attended forum at St. Mark's Church in Lower Manhattan. And my thesis in that is that the war on terror is a fraud. It is the Nazis, Rosenberg, talked about extreme nationalism as the myth of the 20th century. So now we're in the 21st century, we need a new myth. And the myth of this is the war on terror as the organizing principle of society. My essential approach is that 9/11 was a terrorist provocation coming out of the Pentagon, CIA, and related bureaucracies. It was done by a rogue network inside the United States government, not identical with it, but controlling a lot of its assets. And they have tried now to proceed to organize world affairs according to this crazy notion of a war on terror, as if that were the main thing facing humanity. And they've also tried to organize U.S. society around the enemy image of Arabs and Muslims, and to try to use that to impose the kind of police state dictatorship that you talk about. When, however, you get to the warfare side of it, I am not so confident. One of the features of my analysis of September 11th itself is that September 11th was a day that could have been immensely worse than it was. 3,000 dead by, of course, any standard, bad enough. But in the middle of 9/11, and most books on the subject don't even treat this subject, there's a phone call between Bush and Putin. And Bush, in the course of that phone call, delivers an ultimatum to the Russian government saying, we are going to seize Afghanistan, and we're going to seize bases in Soviet Central Asia. What if Putin had said, don't you dare do it, I'll blow your head off, I'll escalate, and if we have thermonuclear war, the U.S. Will be pretty thoroughly destroyed. The Soviets, Russians, almost as bad. Remember, the Russians continue to have more nuclear weapons than the U.S. So you have these moments of extreme tension where it can come to the fore. Now, let's assume that we take seriously the Porter-Goss statements to the Turks and the General Sharon statements before he had his medical crisis, that they want to be ready to attack Iran in the month of March. And we want to get to the reason why. I hope we can spend some time on that, the oil market. But we'll get to that in a minute. The question is, what is that going to look like? If they do this nuclear and conventional bombing of nuclear sites, they will kill Russian citizens in large numbers. We had in the question of Ukraine, as soon as you're dealing with Ukraine, you can immediately see world war in some form on the horizon. For example, back in December of 2004, suppose the pro-Russian parts of Ukraine had seceded from Ukraine, and the Kiev government had tried to restrain them with military force. Suppose the Russians had intervened. Suppose Poland had intervened. Poland, believe it or not, is now a NATO state. You're committed to fight and die for the independence of Poland. I think this is not a very good idea, and the country seems to be run by Zbigniew Brzezinski. I think you have, for a model, you have to have some idea of World War II, some idea of nuclear war as we thought of it perhaps during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I think the big model is the 30 Years' War in Central Europe from 1618 to 1648, which is a series of wars. There's a war, a rebellion in Bohemia that's crushed by the Austrians. Then there's an attempt by Denmark to intervene. That fails. Then there's an invasion by Sweden, which leads to a war between them and Austria. Then France finally comes in. And 30 years later, the thing kind of sputters out when everybody is exhausted. And in the process, you have the highest casualty rates of any European war in recent memory, with about 50% of the population of Central Europe being wiped out. That's immensely more than World War II. There's just no comparison. To have half of the population of Germany and related areas destroyed. I think we have to think in terms of a 30 years war with intermittent use of nuclear weapons, probably not an all-out thermonuclear exchange, although that remains possible as long as the neocons remain committed to their aggressive stance vis-a-vis China and especially vis-a-vis Russia. You can't rule anything out. You're dealing with incalculable risks. That is why these neocon fascist madmen are such a public menace. They must be restrained. And on top of that now, we've got the Bush White House in the middle of Watergateable scandals, let us say. We've got the Libby indictment, but now we've got the NSA spying story and Bush's press conference in the middle of December where he said, yes, I break the law and I will continue to break the law. When presidents get into that, and you'll see it as the months go on, I think we'll have a long 2006, where probably the first weeks were the quickest part.
But Webster, don't you think that this is a red herring? Because let's cook a few people, a few underlings. Let's make some ambiguous attachments here and there, and then do away with some bad guys. But the fact still remains that we had 9/11. We had the Keene Commission. We had that cover-up going. That's been in the White House since Tricky Dick days. Not Zbigniew.
Cheney.
Not Cheney. Gosh, I'll think of his name here in a second.
Rumsfeld.
Not Rumsfeld. No. Henry Kissinger. That was a double agent for the Soviets during World War II.
Right.
You know, he comes in. He's got too much baggage. When that name was dropped, people start dialing the telephones, and he had to, of course, beg out because there was conflicting interest. Yeah, I would say there is. But we had the Keene cover-up here. We have a lot of people in this country that are fully aware of what George Bush has been involved with. The question is, did he know? Here was the question about 9/11. Was he in on the planning on this, or did he know it was going to go on? That's a question that we won't know until we get this guy in a court of law someplace, hopefully.
Let me just break in to say, the finding in my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, is that Bush was probably informed in a general way that something important would happen and that he would have to be on his toes that day to follow orders promptly.
He was on his backside reading stories to children in a school in Florida.
And he was security stripped and offered to anybody who wanted to come along and make an attempt on him. But I think the main crime of Bush is to have capitulated to a coup and turned the government over to the coup plotters and essentially joined with them and become their main propagandist and indeed the architect of the 9/11 myth.
But Webster, you don't see anything deeper behind this, because what I see is a massive network bringing this thing off.
That's what I'm saying. The network is there. The network has been there for more than 100 years. The network goes back to the main. And it goes back to the Gulf of Tonkin and the Kennedy assassination and all the rest. And that is the thing that acts. But they don't send Bush an engraved invitation saying your presence is requested at a coup d'etat. They create a fait accompli. They tell him what he has to do. And it's clear that if he doesn't do it, he'll be next. That's what they said to him. You'll be next if you don't do what we want. And he ran to do what they wanted. So I think it's just that the social relations among these people are much rougher than people imagine. In other words, they don't get together and have a nice, polite discussion in advance to decide what they want to do.
How is it, Webster, that we can get rid of this scourge that has taken over the highest seats of government, or at least control it from behind the scenes? Because Webster, aside from this hot button political stuff that we're talking about right now, and possibly the beginnings of a World War III or some long term contracted wars, we've got serious problems in this country right now that we're dumping billions and billions of dollars, which we don't have. We're in debt up to our eyeballs. Nobody wants to deal with our dollars anymore worldwide, but yet we're off there, and George Bush is leading the way along with Dick Cheney with his hand up his backside. We're over there in the Middle East, and now they're absolutely talking about going into Iran. What is to stop these people? What has to take place to pull the plug on these neocons to try to get a semblance of a United States government back?
Well, I think you have to look at it from two sides. One is that there are forces, there are institutional factors in the world at large that will tend to contain them and tend to make their path a more difficult one. In other words, I have to say I regret very much that French and German resistance against the neocons has pretty much collapsed during 2005 already. That's over for the moment. I do see resistance continuing on the part of Russia and China, as I think we mentioned before. The other thing, of course, is that the neocons, when you look at them, to reduce the problem to them, although the problem is bigger, the problem is this secret government that's been around for 100 years, they have no base. They don't exist. They are based in the academic world, in media, publishing, and in government. But they do not have a social base. It's a very, very interesting phenomenon to have an ideological faction in American politics that runs wild with virtually no base. And the only thing you can say is that they're a reflex of the passivity and corruption of the voter, or the non-voter, to put it better, the average person who simply allows politics to go on. The other thing is, I think you have to have a conjunctural perspective. In other words, the neocons themselves, Samuel Huntington. Samuel Huntington wrote a book in the early 1980s when he said, boys, we have to get ready because we're going to have a political upsurge in this country sometime between 2010 and 2020. The long-term conjunctural perspective. And I think he's correct, and I think that's what we see around us today. It may come a little bit sooner. It may come, well, again, 2010, I think, is about a good time for this thing to peak. If I may, I just wanted to stress one thing, which is the why of this business with Iran, and it leads us back to economics, which I think we have to factor in. The reason that Iran is now such a big threat is not because of a couple of nuclear weapons, because those, as you say, are really trivial. Right? Israel alone can deal with those nuclear weapons as nuclear weapons. There's no problem really with that. It's this question of the oil market. That is a strategic weapon of tremendous capacity. The Iranians are planning on the 20th of March to open now for the first time since 1945, or better yet, since the Saudi Arabians stopped taking British pounds about 1965, to be more accurate. The first time there's going to be an oil market in Tehran where you can go and buy oil and pay in euros. And it's an oil market. Now, this is a tremendous thing.
That's the same thing Saddam Hussein did.
Well, no, he went, this is more, because it's different. One thing is to say, we Iranians, as an oil-producing country, will take payment in euros, or even only in euros. It goes beyond that. It says that we're going to have an oil market where oil from all over the Middle East can be bought and sold in a market using euros. Of course, Saddam Hussein did, as you're correctly pointing out, he did say Iraq will take only euros, and he also took this oil for food program of about $10 billion and made that into euros, which was a heavy blow for the dollar for a few days back there in 2000 to 2001. The North Koreans have also committed this terrible sin of not accepting the dollar for any kind of commercial transaction, and that is now what the Iranians are going to do. The Iranians are going to say, we want euros for our oil, and we have this oil market. Now, up to now, if you want oil, the first thing you've got to do is get dollars. That means that whoever controls the dollars, i.e. the Federal Reserve,
right,
controls all the oil in the world. No matter who seems to own the oil, the Federal Reserve actually owns it because they provide the dollars that you need to get to the oil. The second thing is that the markets are located in New York City, right? There's an oil market in New York City. There's an oil market in London. And then there's another one in Bahrain, I believe, in the Gulf. But all of those use dollars. Now, this is now, for the first time, a euro-based market. Now, let me just mention a couple of statistics.
Well, I want to bring in here how this came about. It was because of the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1945. And after you do this, I'll follow up with this information.
Yes, and again, the Bretton Woods Agreement has two phases. I mean, the Bretton Woods, as long as it was Bretton Woods with gold convertibility,
right,
it worked more or less. It allowed certainly the biggest productive expansion in human history and the rebuilding of Europe after World War II, and so forth. It's about it's with Nixon, right? It's Nixon's ending of the gold convertibility in August of 1971. Then it turns that at that point the growth rates are cut. They decline, and indeed now the growth rates are negative. Just a couple of figures. In the world, central banks, right, the Bank of China, the Bank of Japan, all these places, they are thought to have about $2.3 trillion. The Chinese have, and that's reserves in that amount, not all are in dollars. About two-thirds of the $2.3 trillion equivalent are actually in dollars. The rest are in euros and in other things. Those central bank reserves are kept in dollars because of the role of the dollar in oil transactions, but also in other raw materials, because most of those other raw materials, strategic ones, strategic metals, grains, things like this, those are also in dollar markets. There's also a $3.3 trillion U.S. foreign debt liability. Let's make, instead of $3.3 trillion, since a year has gone by, let's make it $4 trillion. The U.S. is the biggest debtor country in the world and owes $4 trillion to other countries. And then floating around the world, we have $11 trillion in dollar-denominated paper.
Okay, I'll ask you to hold that thought, and I want to pick up with that line right after this break. We'll be right back.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied toward your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
The American Empire was born with the Bretton Woods in 1945. Now, the U.S. dollar was not fully convertible to gold, but was made convertible to gold only to foreign governments. Now, this established the dollar as the reserve currency of the world, which always amazed me that that term was used, because the FRNs are no better value than any other fiat currency, but the reserve currency of the world. It was possible because during World War II, the United States had supplied its allies with provisions demanding gold as payment, and thus accumulating a significant portion of the world's gold. Now, our little empire would not have been possible if, following the Bretton Woods arrangement, the dollar supply was kept limited and within the availability of gold so as to fully exchange back to dollars for gold. And then we bring in other things like LBJ's Great Society, the waste in Vietnam, the waste that we're witnessing now in Afghanistan and Iraq. I've seen the figures, Webster. The Office of Management and Budget put this out a couple of years ago, just a little blurb. I think it's a public notice legal thing that they've got to do for a country that's in officially in bankruptcy and has been since 1933. They came out and said the past, present, and future obligations of the United States government was $51 trillion. Now, we've got all these countries holding this currency in reserve, and according to the Bretton Woods agreement, that they can come back and cash this in on gold. Now, they've been trying to keep the price of gold artificially suppressed. Well, the Rothschilds out of England just got out of that market. So I see something on the horizon here that doesn't look too good for us.
Well, the convertibility of the U.S. dollar into gold has been a dead letter since August 15, 1971. It has been, nobody's gotten any gold out of the U.S. government. I don't think there are any real exceptions to that. The thing that I would point to, though, more than the gold side of it, the instability also comes from the fact that we have this $700 billion trade deficit. You see, the debt you have towards your own country is manageable, or may be manageable. The debt you have towards foreign countries most likely won't be, because you don't control them. You can't pass laws to govern what they do. So right now we have, let's say it's a $700 billion trade deficit. That is essentially, what, it's a $1.5 billion a day. Somebody has estimated $1 million a minute of foreign borrowing. You've got to get people to send dollars into the U.S., and most of the time they're borrowing these federal treasury bonds, of course, the treasury securities, U.S. government paper. You've also got an official $400 billion budget deficit, which is really more like a $700 billion. So ultimately you get up to about $1.5 trillion in the twin deficits, and of those two, the $700 billion foreign trade deficit is by far the more dangerous, because it's by far the more unmanageable. Now, to the extent that the U.S. foreign indebtedness has gone from $3.3 trillion to $4 trillion, and by the end of this year it'll be close to $5 trillion, you reach a point where that cannot be sustained. And people have written these scenarios that you get a young MBA working as a currency manager for the central bank of, oh, Singapore or some, you know, middle rank power in the Far East or someplace like that, gets up one day and says, gee, you know, we have a lot of dollars in our accounts. Why don't we lighten up on dollars and get some euros? Because the dollar continues to fall and the euro seems to be better off. And if you do that, it's one of those situations where it's the kind of thing that chaos theory talks about. And if you've got a pile of sand, you reach a point where just a few grains will bring the whole thing down in a slide, or the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. You get into a panic flight out of the dollar, which also goes together with a panic crash or run on the U.S. banking system. And I see this as a big danger for 2006. And I think this is what they're trying to prevent by military means. In other words, to bomb Iran back into the Stone Age before they can open their peaceful and absolutely unthreatening, really, oil market, where you buy your oil in euros.
All right, we've got a break here. Top of the hour coming up. We'll take the calls into the next hour. 800-313-9443. International listeners, 50-50 on your shortwave dial.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a huge power grab.
If Congress approves the FTAA, our nation will be pushed down the same path that produced the European Union. There will be no more illegal immigration because there will be no enforcement of borders. Americans will lose control of their destiny as regional bureaucrats from corrupt political systems decide our future. Sound incredible? Check out the facts for yourself. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then tell Congress you want a better future for America. That's stoptheftaa.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.